Now in this latest episode from the Teacher's Lift, we hear from Dave Gattrell, Pedagogical Consultant at PolyU's Educational Development Centre. Hosts Dawn Gillis and Eric Tindall quiz Dave about his PhD studies and how video annotation software can help boost learners' communication skills for today's academic environment. Listeners keen to spice up their own classes can pick up a few tips and tricks from Dave as he waxes lyrical about his ongoing collaboration with teachers from the English Language Centre in an effort to add video annotation software to their ever-growing box of technological tools.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Teacher's Lift. We are coming at you from the Hong Kong Polytechnic University today. Eric Tindall here, along with my partner, Dawn Gillis. How's it going, Dawn? Getting on okay?
Not bad, Eric. Not bad. At least the sun is shining. At the moment in Hong Kong, that's probably one of the only good things.
Yes. It's a precarious time here in Hong Kong. With all the record number of cases, but it's also an incredible time for the changes in the field of education and pedagogy.
Yes, it is, Eric.
I'm sure many of our listeners out there are experiencing that right now, which is why we are joined by our special guest today, Mr. Dave Gattrell from the Educational Development Center here at PolyU. So thank you for joining us, Dave, and welcome.
Hi there, it's a pleasure, thank you.
Now, Dave, maybe first you can begin by telling our listeners like what it is you do.
Okay, so I work at PolyU in the Educational Development Center, and my role involves working with academics to support them in designing and delivering their courses, exploring new pedagogies like blended learning or hybrid teaching using new technologies. And yeah, it's a fascinating role. I love my job here, and I like getting to work with such a range of different academics across the institution.
That sounds really great, Dave. You've been here for a few years now, is that correct? Here at PolyU, I mean.
Yeah, I've been at PolyU for just over 3 years.
Okay.
But yes. I've been in Hong Kong a lot longer than that. I've been here for just over 11 years now.
Wow. And am I correct in saying that you were with the British Council before you came to PolyU?
Yeah, I worked with them for quite a long time, like a lot of people who work in PolyU, I think. And I worked with them in the Czech Republic and Spain. Then I moved to Hong Kong originally with them to work in English language teaching. But then I became interested in digital learning, in e-learning and teacher development. And that is why I eventually wanted to work at PolyU in this kind of role, working with academics to help them in their e-learning.
You mentioned that you were with a number of countries with the British Council. Were you just language teaching at that time, or were you already starting to get involved in some design?
I've always been interested in more than just classroom teaching. It is something that I enjoyed a lot. And I think from an early stage, like back in the early 2000s, I became interested in using things like blogs and wikis, interactive whiteboards and video games in the classroom. And then as I gained more experience, I started working more to do teacher professional development within the British Council. Then I worked more with local teachers from outside the British Council at state schools. And I think that's probably the thing I enjoy most about my role, working with other teachers, trying to understand their context and how kind of emerging technologies can help them with their teaching.
Right. And you mentioned you were you've been at PolyU now 3 years, so that would put you arriving around 2019, which is right before, of course, everything hit the fan and right before the pandemic. Describe what it was like then to experience that, you know, that moment that where everything had to change and we had to, you know, teachers, academics had to embrace the technology more and more to adapt.
Right. Yeah. So I joined at the very end of 2018, mm-hmm. and the first 6 months I enjoyed the work I was doing, but I kind of missed some of the work that I had been doing with the British Council on online teacher development courses. And funnily enough, the campus shutdown and then the pandemic gave me a chance to rediscover some of those things and get more into them again and try and apply some of my old skills or knowledge to a different context. So, you know, when the campus first closed due to the protests, we had to very quickly provide training to academics in synchronous online teaching and using a learning management system to design courses, creating videos with minimal resources. And that kind of thing was actually very stimulating for me and quite motivating, because it helped me rediscover some of my lost skills. Mm. And, you know, as the pandemic has worn on, I feel the need for those kinds of skills hasn't really gone away. Mm. And more academics are more confident using them. They don't see them as a substitute for what went before, but actually a chance to do something new in their teaching. So it hasn't been entirely negative. Probably for my professional life and my academic research that I've been doing, it's been overall a positive experience for me.
Right. You mentioned now, of course, the academics are quite open and quite receptive and it's necessary to integrate all these IT tools into their pedagogy. But how about at that first time, did you get some resistance from some of the academics, you know, who maybe held on to traditional beliefs about how classes are taught, or were they all fairly receptive from the get-go?
It's difficult to say, because the ones who attended the workshops that I did or approached me for help generally were people who were interested in trying these new pedagogies or ideas or tools. So they were receptive, and I enjoyed discussing ideas with them. But then I would say the greatest resistance that I've experienced has been when the university brought in hybrid teaching, which, you know, I can see you rolling your eyes or heads at that.
But we would never do that.
Phrase. But hybrid teaching was met with a lot of resistance. A lot of people were unhappy about using online synchronous tools at the beginning. And I think some people are still unhappy about it. But it has changed, I think, over the last 2 years.
Right.
Yeah, Dave. Sorry, Eric. Yeah. Do you think that people are going to be more receptive to the hybrid mode then? Because, yeah, as a couple of teachers here that had to experience it, some of us longer than others, it's challenging as a teacher in a collaborative learning environment. I think it definitely has room in lectures and different types of courses, but. But for some courses, it's challenging, such as what we are teaching here in the English Language Center. So, do you see that there's room for that then in the future?
I think hybrid teaching does have a role in the future of teaching and higher education. I think in language teaching, it can also have a role. I think it's an approach to teaching where you need to consciously plan for and integrate interaction between different students. It's not really the most rewarding experience I've had as an educational developer working to try and implement that approach, because it's really been treated as just a solution to a problem, or a possible solution to a problem, rather than a new pedagogy that people can really embrace. And that's why I'm more interested in blended learning and, you know, in the use of video for formative assessment and feedback and that area. So when it came to me deciding what to write my PhD thesis on, I didn't really want to try and investigate hybrid teaching at the university. I was much more interested in the use of video for formative assessment. And I see that as quite closely related to blended learning.
This is a great segue into your studies then. You have just mentioned you're doing a PhD, and it's something to do with video and annotation software. Is that correct?
Yeah, I applied for the PhD in the middle of 2019, and not realizing that it would be a real lifesaver and a great focus during the years of the pandemic. And when I started it, I was quite interested in working with video, but I had one or two other ideas for my PhD. It's a program with the University of Lancaster and with Lancaster University, and it involves 2 years of a taught program where you're encouraged to try different topics and methodologies and theoretical frameworks before, after 2 years, choosing a focus for your thesis in the second part of the program. So that's what I did, and I did studies focusing on synchronous online teaching and hybrid teaching, but then ultimately came back to the idea of video-based formative assessment. And I think it fits well with my role at the university and the kind of areas that I want to move into. And it also ties in with my earlier career as an English language teacher, because I think one area that this kind of approach, video that I'm studying, has been used is in teacher education and language teaching, as well as in vocational subjects like nursing or optometry or physiotherapy that are taught at PolyU.
So do you want to talk to us a little bit about what exactly is this video annotation software that is the focus of your research?
Yeah, well, the focus of the research is how teachers can design and implement activities using video annotation to try and develop students' feedback skills and reflective practice, but also to develop their subject skills and communication skills. And the video software doesn't really have to be any one type of software, but we have a tool called Panopto at PolyU, and Panopto has a feature called the discussion tool, which allows teachers and students to pause the video at different points and initiate a discussion around what's happening in the video. So the way this kind of software has been used in other research and other disciplines and other studies is that students might record themselves performing a role play or giving a presentation or carrying out a procedure on a patient, interacting with a client, and then using the recording, review their practice and write reflective comments at different points during the video, or have a group of peers, or maybe their teacher, write peer feedback or feedback on different parts of the video. So it could be used to work on verbal communication, looking at different parts of language, or non-verbal or paralingual communication, like their tone of voice or body language, or the way they're using certain kinds of equipment with a patient or client. So my research is exploring how the use of that tool changes the learning experience and how teachers develop those kinds of activities using the tool, and how it changes their teaching and what they can accomplish in terms of learning outcomes.
Right, Dave. So are you currently collaborating with the ELC on some of this using this sort of video software?
Yeah, I am. And it's been really rewarding working with the ELC on it. I'm collaborating with 8 different teachers on a large subject, looking at presentation skills for doctoral students. But my research also includes a group of third-year physiotherapy students who are doing patient presentations, and first-year biology students who are presenting their proposal for a course project in groups, some postgraduate nursing students. There are 5 cases altogether. You know, initially I planned to study interpersonal communications. Initially, I planned to study interpersonal communication skills in other subjects, but unfortunately, this semester, due to the pandemic, they couldn't go ahead. So I'd hoped to work with mental health nursing students to look at how they to study them as they role play interactions with people. I wanted to study palliative care and how they interact with a simulated patient. Some colleagues from School of Optometry who I've worked with on a number of projects. I'd plan to work with their students to look at how they carry out different procedures in clinical optometry, but all of that had to be scrapped. Luckily, video presentations can still go ahead pretty much as planned in a fully online environment. I see it as a very good way as well to help students develop skills even where there aren't opportunities to do it face-to-face, and it can lead to new forms of learning.
Yes, do you want to talk a little bit more about that? Because you know, your research, you're focusing on in a wide variety of different situations of how this annotation software, these annotation platforms can be used. And you're looking specifically at their communication skills. You know, what's the impact of the use of these platforms on their communication skills? So what have you found so far in your research? Any tentative conclusions or findings that you can enlighten our listeners on?
Okay, well, the first thing I want to say about using video to develop communication skills is that it's been used for many decades, but traditionally in the 60s or 70s, it was very teacher-led because of the nature of the technology. It had to be led by the teacher as a whole class approach, maybe replaying what students had done on a big screen so everybody could watch together. Having students work independently using a video tool like Panopto makes it more student-centered. So students can direct their own learning, they can collect the feedback that they want from other students rather than it all being led by the teacher. They can choose what they share with other people, they can try the task a number of times before they're happy with it. That gives them a lot of extra practice. But the benefit of having an annotation tool rather than just watching a video and maybe writing or giving peers an overall comment is that students can be much more specific in their feedback. They can really pinpoint specific events in the recording and engage in a discussion around those events. And it's much more evidence-based. That students can really support what they're giving feedback on with concrete examples from the recording. And it gives other students a right to reply. So if the feedback is in the form of a question, like, I don't know why you're waving your hands around so much at that point, or why did you choose this word in your presentation, or why did you put the lamp at such a low setting? The student can reply and justify what they did. And then it can become an interactive learning resource where students can navigate around the video and really look at critical moments in the presentation. And again, it's led by the students rather than the teacher. The teacher can observe the feedback process and jump in at any point, but right, it can also be directed by the learners.
Right, right. So Dave, it sounds like you are implementing this tool through various departments within PolyU, but do you see this as a tool that can be used in other language centers across, let's say, Hong Kong or even worldwide?
I definitely think it could be used within other language centers. It's not in any way limited to PolyU or to Hong Kong. I think it is quite a useful tool for our cultural context, because typically students are quite shy when performing, whether it's a role play or a presentation or a procedure, and having opportunities to practice until they get it right and then share the recording with other people can really build up their confidence. Also, people all over the world, I think, can be quite shy when it comes to giving critical feedback, or they might not be very good at giving critical feedback. And being able to do it through a video not only creates a more comfortable, less threatening environment for students, but also allows students to observe how their classmates have given feedback on each other.
Right, and have you experienced any difficulties or any problems with, let's say, cultural issues, such as here in Hong Kong, that, you know, like in most cases, I would say that students sometimes feel a bit shy or embarrassed to give feedback also because they are not the teacher, right? You know, they don't feel they're qualified to do that. So have you experienced any of that where the student doesn't really want to say anything, that they sort of want to leave it up to the teacher?
I've experienced it, but I think this kind of teaching approach can address that problem. It can try and create more opportunities for students to give peer feedback and build up their confidence in giving feedback. It can help students realize that their feedback is valuable and that the purpose of feedback isn't just to benefit the other person, but to benefit themselves. In fact, a lot of research into peer review and peer feedback shows that students benefit a lot more from giving feedback than they do from receiving it. And I think it's quite good to encourage students to focus on that benefit of the feedback. They don't have to necessarily give perfect, accurate feedback all the time, but it should be meaningful to them when they're giving feedback to other people. And I think it's up to teachers to help model that. So teachers need to be ready to train students to give good feedback. They need to provide good worked examples, not only of the communication practices, but also of the feedback that other students might give. And they should try to show that feedback can be a conversation and not just a one-way thing from one peer to another, but it can actually be a conversation by a group of peers about a video. And I wouldn't say it's a cultural thing within Hong Kong. I think it can depend a lot more on students' disciplines and their previous experience of feedback at school, or perhaps in their everyday lives.
Presumably part of your research is collecting student perceptions of this experience. Am I right? Have you collected like students' opinions on how they find this learning experience?
Yeah, the research design is that we, because I'm doing the research as part of a team that I lead of colleagues at PolyU from the EDC. We also collaborate a lot with the individual teachers. So of course we do learn a bit about the students at a collective level from the teacher, but it's also very important for us to use pre and post surveys with students to try to find out more about how they've experienced the technology and the learning approach. The research design uses a theoretical framework called activity theory. So it's really trying to explore, mainly through qualitative methods, the change in experience as a result of this new tool. And the student survey responses, I would say they are interesting. And we can also observe not just their perceptions of using it, but also what they do using the tool through their annotations on the videos. It's really fascinating for me anyway.
Dave, does this type of tool work better with online classes, or can it work well in a face-to-face setting too?
I like it because it can work very well in both settings. It's particularly good for a blended course, I would say, because it involves students doing a practical hands-on kind of activity in class, which might be taking part in a role play or procedure or planning a presentation. Then they get to record themselves doing the activity, and then they can work asynchronously to give peer feedback using the annotation tool. And they can take a lot more time to really explore what people are doing and get into more of a discussion around different points in the recording. Then if students can come back together in the following lesson, the teacher can maybe give their feedback or direct the activity a bit more. But it can work well in a fully online course. What does happen though is when teaching is fully online, like it is at the moment, it's more difficult for students to get together and take part in communication activities with a lot of interaction. When teaching's fully online, presentations in the form of videos can work a lot better than something like a role play or a procedure in a lab.
Right. And when you're talking about that, one of the things I that kind of popped into my mind is, maybe the video annotation software actually provides another venue of interaction, even though they don't have these face-to-face opportunities, because as you said, they can give each other comments asynchronously, and you can kind of maintain an interactive environment, even though there's no physical face-to-face interaction. I was just wondering, I don't know if you have this, but you may have these analytic tools that, where you can monitor how many views the videos get, or do students go back and check them? My question, I guess, is, are students actually going back and checking their peers' feedback after they submit their video and, it's commented on, to what extent are students going back and watching it with the annotations, with their peers' comments? I mean, are there any statistics or analytics that might answer that question?
Well, it's a good question. And the research does use learning analytics as well as part of the data, because these kinds of video platforms do generate lots of analytics. You can learn how many views the video's had, who's viewed it, how much of the video they've watched as a proportion, how many minutes they've spent watching the video. And of course, the annotations themselves are interesting, because you can see which points in the video students wanted to comment on and which types of comments have got the most replies. The extent to which students actually go back and read the comments depends a lot on the task design, because if teachers encourage students to do it, and they encourage students to get into a discussion around some of the feedback, then they will do it. If it's set up in such a way that students just need to meet a minimum requirement, which is to go and post 2 comments or something, then they may not go back and look at it. And it depends a lot on how the video task fits into other activities. So, last semester we worked with a service learning subject in community psychology, where there were about 30 students, and they we're preparing to go into the community in Lyking and interact with older adults as part of their service learning course. And students made videos where they interacted with a simulated client, and they had to navigate different kinds of difficult cultural situations with the client. And then they had to watch each other's recordings and evaluate them based on a rubric. Now, having the rubric and having that kind of task, which really led on to a meaningful interaction with clients in a real setting, led to a very high number of comments and interactions and discussions. It can also depend on the student groupings. If students are working with people they trust and want to interact with, then there'll be a lot more discussion than if the teacher randomly puts them into groups. If the task is meaningful, there'll be more interaction and discussion. So it depends very much on the context that it's used in. But I think English language teaching, going back to that, is a particularly good area to use it in, because there's lots of scope for different kinds of communication-based activities, which other subjects might not have. Plus, you get to work with such a range of academic departments, like I do, and that might allow you to try it in a wider range of contexts than some other teachers at the institution.
Sure, yeah, Dave, especially in these really recent times, especially here in Hong Kong, you know, because here at PolyU, we experienced the protests and then we kind of went straight into a pandemic and forced to go online, everything that we have mentioned earlier. So therefore, technology has played a huge role in our teaching, not just for the other departments, but especially for us here in the Language Center. So I've got the golden question for you, the $1 million question. Do you think that technology always helps us, or can it hinder us? if you have a good answer for that, then we might sign up for your courses one day.
Well, I think the answer is that it depends, and it depends a lot on the teacher and the learners, and the the motivation of the students to learn, the kinds of activities that the teacher designs. I think using video technology and annotation tools to develop and analyze and reflect on communication can always have some kind of benefit. But the benefit could be unexpected. It's not necessarily the case that all students will experience the technology in the same way. Some students might feel it really helps them to develop confidence or achieve their personal learning goals. Other students may not get the same benefit. But I think it also depends on the teacher who's using it. If they go into it with clear objectives and learning outcomes for the students, then they're likely to feel that they've experienced some benefit from it. That's why I'm generally more positive when it comes to blended learning approaches than something like hybrid teaching, or I'm more positive about using something like video than using something like interactive whiteboards. Because I think some approaches and tools, they really prescribe doing things in a certain kind of way, like with interactive whiteboards, maybe teaching in a very teacher-centered way. With hybrid teaching, it automatically creates a lot more stress and workload for the teacher. So it immediately creates a sense of things not being quite quite as good as they would be without that approach or that technology. But something like blended learning, it allows you to start with a small amount of digital or online learning and then gradually build up to doing more as you gain confidence. With video, again, you could start with a very simple activity for students to do and give feedback on, and then build up to longer videos or more difficult tasks with the students. So even using a small amount of the approach could benefit you and your students. You're not just thrown into a completely different way of doing things.
Right. And it is a question that, of course, opens up a whole dozens of other different questions, right? And we'd love to, we'd of course love to explore those more because they are all each have their own fascinating answers. Before you go, Dave, I just wanted to ask, because maybe some of our listeners out there are curious. You mentioned Panopto is a good software tool to do some of these video annotation activities or tasks for students. But are there any others that you know of or could recommend to our listeners?
Yeah, sure. The first time I got into using this kind of approach was when I worked in online teacher education with the British Council, and I worked on a project with teachers in the Baltic countries, in Europe. And though on that project, we used a tool called Iris Connect, where the big selling point is that you have multiple recording streams and a very easy to use LMS, where teachers can discuss different parts of the videos, they can rate different activities. So I recommend that. There's another tool designed by people with a background in language teaching and teacher development called Veo, from the Spanish word meaning I see. And it's a really, that has a good feature, which is when you're reviewing a video, you can hit different buttons to comment on different aspects of communication, or if you're working with other teachers, different skills in the classroom, like giving instructions or classroom management or using resources. So I'd recommend Iris Connect and Veo if you are going to use the tool or the approach to do professional development with other language teachers. A similar tool to Panopto, and I think it's their arch rival, is called Echo 360. That I think has broadly similar tools, but there are a whole range of tools that basically do the same thing. They allow you to pause the video, write a comment, and then discuss the comment with other people. And they all give you various kinds of analytics. I find Panopto does work well, but the main reason we're using it for our project is because it's the official video platform at PolyU, and it has support from the IT department. If we'd use a different tool, then we would have had to do all of that ourselves. So it's been very good using Panopto for our research, but you don't need to go and buy a Panopto license just to try using the approach yourself. And finally, I think there may be other education departments or language centers across Hong Kong that have used a similar approach before, either for teacher education or for different communication skills. Certainly what we're doing on our projects in using the approach isn't anything completely novel. I think what's maybe novel is that we're looking very closely at the student experience and looking at the annotations that students are leaving as the main source of our data. It's not a kind of experimental study just to look at learning outcomes, for example. So in that sense, hopefully the study will add something different.
Excellent. Thank you for that, Dave. Those websites or those recommendations there, I'm quite eager to try out, because I do see the potential of this, especially in language learning and also in other educational contexts. And I'm sure, Dawn, you also would agree with me that.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So thank you, Dave. We'd love to talk to you longer, but I think we are running out of time here at the Lift. So thank you for sharing some of that research and some of your findings on the use of video annotation software and perhaps the potential that they can be used in to improve students' communication skills and improve their confidence in giving feedback to each other and receiving feedback. I hope our listeners out there, you all found it helpful too, or you will find it helpful in your own teaching. So thank you once again, Dave. We wish you the best of luck. Stay healthy, stay safe.
Yes, thank you, Dave.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I've enjoyed it a lot. And same to you, stay safe.
Yes, and we hope to see you back on campus one day, soonish.
Me too.
As we all do, yes. Thank you, everybody. And we're signing off here on the Teachers Lift. See you next time.